You're listening to Discover Hope with Pastor Tom Leake of Hope Bible Church in Columbia, Maryland.
You know the destructive power of the tongue. The tongue can be spoken and someone could go out and kill themselves. The tongue can be spoken and it can break apart a relationship forever. The tongue can be speaking out something like that and can just ruin somebody else's career with slander, right? The tongue can be damaging. We are reminded over and over and over again, keep a tight rein on your tongue. If you're a religious person, if you're a Christian, you need to bridle your own tongue. Don't worry about someone else's tongue. Work on your tongue.
Do you consider yourself religious? Religious activities and practices are important and helpful. However, if your religion is on the outside and you don't have a right heart for God, your religion is worthless. Today, Pastor Tom will teach of an indicator of genuine faith. If you truly desire to follow God, you must guard your tongue. The tongue can cause damage, hurt relationships, and limit your potential. James teaches that if you don't have control of your tongue, your faith isn't genuine. Are you careful about what you say? Now, here's Pastor Tom in the book of James chapter 1 as he begins his message, True Religion.
Around the Word of God, we continue our fellowship as we hear His Word and we respond in our hearts to His Word. You know, the Christian subculture in America has its practices, has its forms and figures and ways of doing things. You should know you're kind of part of it. People can see certain things going on and they say, that guy must be a Christian because of maybe something he wears or does. Christians go to church, they listen to Christian radio, they download Christian apps, they have fun and food and fellowship. They put up plaques on their walls, maybe a fish on a car, a rock and roll t-shirt maybe. We try to avoid certain things, drunken parties, gambling, porn shops. We have reasons for these kinds of things. We're distinct, we're a little bit different than the world we're supposed to be. I think there's nothing inherently wrong with having a subculture. We have it. Anyone would expect if you have a subculture, they have something about that subculture that walks and quacks a little bit differently than the other subcultures. The problem is not with those kinds of externals. The problem is when the internals of our religion are absent, but the externals are there. When Christianity is worn on the outside and not lived on the inside, this was a concern. It led Jesus to denounce very strongly the Pharisees. It led the prophets of Israel to tell the Israelites to stop their forms of religion and bring them no more until their hearts were right. Don't bring me all the songs when you're practicing a lack of justice throughout the week. It also is a concern which led James to write the two verses that are our text today. The end of chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. I'm going to read it for you. Please open there to James 1. Follow along. Consider what God would say to you this day. James writes, "If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world." Today's a corrective message. It's instruction, but it has correction as its aim. It's based on a self-thought. You see it there in verse 26. If anyone thinks himself to be religious. Now, sometimes we think other people are religious. There's somebody who's religious. But this is when you think of yourself as religious. There are people like that. You might be one of them. There are many people in the world that think that they're religious. There are all kinds of religions in the world. And they may practice their religion and think, I'm a religious person. I'm dedicated to my religion. They think themselves to be religious. Religious is the word threskos, a word that's used only here in the entire New Testament. Isn't that interesting? Although the related word is used in verse 27, religion. This term, religious, ever wonder what that means? What does it mean, you're religious? This term refers to the relationship with a deity and to mostly the displays that and the practices that go along with a religion. Josephus used this very term for all of the Jewish ceremonies that they carried on in the temple. They did these ceremonies, and so they were religious. Many religions, many different kinds of practices. If you practice one religion, there are certain things that go with that, and you see someone do that, and you say, oh, they're religious and they're Buddhist. Or you see someone else, you know, a month of fasting, which is really not a month of fasting, and you say, oh, they must be Muslim. So there are the practices that go along with that. Jesus participated in religious things. Jesus was religious. Jesus thought of himself as religious. Jesus went to the temple and participated in the feasts and did the various things that were required of him. Jesus was a religious man. For many people, these religious activities would include things like attending worship services, making sacrifices, participating in a fast of some kind, singing certain kinds of songs. There's always liturgy that are in different kinds of religion. Saying prayers, there's a religious thing. Lighting candles, you know. Maybe even making pilgrimages. In their religion, they need to go and travel somewhere, see something. Maybe abstaining from certain kinds of foods or drinks. The Romans were trying to figure out what all the fuss was that was following the Apostle Paul wherever he went and preached from city to city. And in Acts 25:19, it says that they saw this as a disagreement with Paul about their own religion. They didn't want to get involved in that. It's some disagreement about a religion. They kind of looked at that. There's a religion that's being practiced. They're squabbling about a religion. What does this have to do with us? Oh, and Paul was asserting that there was some man that was alive from the dead. And they were arguing about this and getting angry. It's a religious squabble. Leave it alone. Acts 26:5, the Apostle Paul said he was raised a Pharisee, according to the strictest sect of our religion. So he was religious times four. You know, he was the strictest sect. He was like, some are all out in their religion. That was him. You know, religion is still a very powerful force in the world. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, the atheists are always talking, and they're really not ever, they're always a very small minority because atheism never proves anything. Atheism is a non-explanation. You know, how did the universe get here? From nothing. I mean, there's no intellectual basis for atheism. They just don't like to admit that because you press them with a few questions. They have no answers at all. That's why people are inherently religious. They are that way because they know there has to be something that explains all of this. If you went to Jerusalem today, the whole city, the old Jerusalem, the whole place is religious. It just smells of religion. I mean, everything that everybody's wearing, they're trying to outdo one another. There's the holy sites and how they keep the holy sites, the banners that they put up, what they wear, the songs, the yarmulkes, everything. It's just all religious. There's the Jews doing their religious thing, and some of them are more so than others. There's the Catholics, and they have their little niche. The Muslims have their little, the Armenians have their little thing going. Everybody's got their thing going, you know, except the evangelicals. They don't have too much of a display there in old Jerusalem. But they're very, very religious. You see the signs everywhere. So James is talking to people who think they're religious. And there's lots of those kind of people in the world. Lots of them. And they practice their religion. They know there's a God of some kind. They know there's some metaphysical something out there. They get that. They're beyond the silliness of atheism. They think that their religion is true. And by the way, this person's not a hypocrite, not a conscious hypocrite, that is. You know, they really do think that they are practicing their religion. They think they're religious. Now, maybe they were raised by their parents to be religious and they haven't thought it all through that much. Maybe they're part of some kind of a subculture and it's a very religious subculture and they just kind of grab onto that. Some of you kids are raised up in this church and you're raised in a religious environment. And you need to think through, okay, so why, you know, what am I doing here with my religion? Sometimes they've met somebody and they've converted over to a religion and someone was persuasive and they've joined that religion. But here is the main point. Thinking yourself to be religious is not enough. True? It's not enough. There must be some genuine, heartfelt practice of a religion. True religion centers on the heart. It comes from the mind. It comes from the whole being. Otherwise, it becomes a show. It becomes a farce. True religion results in obeying what God's law of liberty says. So what James writes here, very interestingly, is true religion is revealed in three tests, and that's our little outline. There are three tests, and you can use this to test yourself. You can use this to develop your own discernment about who really has true religion. But here are the tests. First, controlling the tongue. Second, helping the helpless. And third, keeping yourself unstained by the world. Three tests if your religion is a true religion. Now, I got to say right from the very beginning that James is not trying to say these are the only three indications of true religion, okay? Douglas Moo in his commentary says, we would badly misunderstand these verses were we to think that James is intending to summarize here all that true worship of God should involve. Obviously, it does not. John Calvin said, James does not define generally what religion is, but reminds us that religion without the things he mentions is nothing. So these are three good tests. One more quote for you. Dan McCartney, he says, this verse is not meant as an exhaustive list of what pleases God. Rather, it describes by personal example the behavior patterns exhibited by a person whose character is being shaped by true religion. That is, genuine faith. Do you have genuine faith? Is your faith genuine, and are you saved because the faith that you have is a genuine faith? Well, here's three tests that kind of unpack that and reveal that, because we have a problem, and that problem is we deceive ourselves a lot. And this verse is just like it's a wonderful opening for you to be able to see inside of you and say, do I really have true religion, or is it kind of stuck on the outside and hasn't come to the inside? Okay, you with me? That's what we're doing here. First, controlling the tongue. Oh my, here we go. Verse 26. So he says he's religious, but he does not, what? Bridle his tongue. So that means he deceives his own heart. We'll stop right there. This introduces a theme that James is going to write about in much greater detail as he gets into the letter more. When we get to chapter 3, almost the whole chapter is about the tongue. So we'll save a lot of the ammunition for there. We have to talk about our tongue. As believers, we need to talk about our tongue. But here he's basically saying, if there isn't some kind of basic bridling or control of your tongue, if you can't find that in your life, then your religion is not a true religion. And it's interesting, he chooses bridling. I mean, he brings up the image of the horse, right? The harness on the horse at the mouth. Why? So he can be turned wherever he needs to go. It's a big animal. Or he can be pulled to stop, right? It's kind of hard to stop a horse. Horse is a massive animal. A horse has a load of strength. There's a reason why even 100 years after we developed the automobile, we're still talking about how much horsepower it has inside of it, right? You have to pull the horse this way or that way. Can you imagine a 700, 800, 900-pound horse galloping full speed at you or at a crowd of people? They'd all get out of the way, right? What destruction a horse like that could give? That horse needs to be controlled. The horse is controlled by the bridle. What about us? The tongue is much smaller, but the tongue can create all kinds of damage, can it not? Have you ever been hurt by someone else's tongue? Don't even answer that. Some of your deepest wounds are because of what other people said to you, and one of those moments they didn't think very much, or they thought too much and they wanted to harm you. You know the destructive power of the tongue. The tongue can be spoken and someone could go out and kill themselves. The tongue can be spoken and it can break apart a relationship forever. The tongue can be speaking out something like that and can just ruin somebody else's career with slander, right? The tongue can be damaging. We are reminded over and over and over again, keep a tight rein on your tongue. If you're a religious person, if you're a Christian, you need to bridle your own tongue. Don't worry about someone else's tongue. Work on your tongue. Many of the Proverbs just say that. I'm going to read some of them for you. Proverbs 12, 18. There's one who speaks rashly. And then it says this, like the thrusts of a sword. You know, gotcha. And that's what it is. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. Does your tongue hurt or does your tongue heal? Proverbs 15, 4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Man, that's what a tongue can do. Proverbs 18, 21, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Proverbs 21, 23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from trouble. A lot of times we have trouble in our lives because we didn't guard our tongues. I put myself in that category. I say something, I'm like, nah, I got a whole bunch of problems. I shouldn't have said that. If I hadn't said that, I wouldn't have all these troubles, but I said it, so now I have the troubles, no taking it back. I got to deal with the trouble, and I got to work all the way through that. How much trouble we would avoid if we just held on to our tongues. The north wind brings forth rain and a backbiting tongue and angry countenance. Proverbs 25, 23. Proverbs 26, 28. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. All kinds of ways the tongue can hurt. It flatters, it lies, it deceives, it boasts, it slanders, all those things. The tongue can be vitriolic, hateful, arrogant, slanderous, boisterous, cunning, and all those things hurt. Did you know that self-control was one of the list of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5:23, having control over what you say? Paul wrote in Ephesians 4:29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for what? For edification, for building up. Your tongue should always be about how can I help other people be built up. Sometimes you need to correct them in order to build them up, but you have to do that in humility. You have to do that with patience and gentleness, so it's obvious you're not trying to put them down and put yourself up. If you're correcting someone, it's because you're trying to correct them and help them. You're on their side. So your spirit needs to show you're on their side. Don't correct them and say, well, I'm correcting someone because that's what I do. I correct people. Yeah, but you sound like you're hurting them. You know, well, that's my gift. Well, keep that gift to yourself. Make sure you're edifying. Make sure you're building up. If you have to correct, look to yourself and then be constructive in the way that you correct someone else. We need correction, but we need godly correctors in the church. Be edifying. Only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment. How do you build someone else up? Think what their need is. If they're having trouble in some area in their spirit and you've discerned that, then help them with that. Talk to them gently. If they misunderstand you, tell them, I think you've misunderstood me. I'm here to help. When your feelings settle down, I'll come back and help. And make sure your tongue is building up. Control your tongue. Sometimes the tongue has to say nothing, wait for the opportune moment, and then say something. So let's go back to this person who thinks he's religious. He thinks he's religious, but he doesn't bridle his tongue. What is the conclusion? He has deceived his own what? Heart. The tongue is that important. If you can't bridle the tongue, whatever you think you are is not true. I'm sorry, but that's what it says. It says if you can't bridle your tongue, your religion's not true. You may have thought it's true. You may have been going to church services for a long time, but it hasn't gotten on the inside of you yet. Man, you need to wake up because this is true. You deceive your own heart. See, really, we're talking about the heart here. You're deceiving your own heart because you see what comes out of the tongue reveals the heart, right? Jesus said that. It's not what you eat that defiles you. And he was letting the Jewish people know, it's not what you eat that defiles you. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out of your mouth that defiles you. You speak from your mind. You know, people say, I speak my mind. That's right. You speak your mind and your mind is ugly. The heart is another word for mind. It's not feelings, it's thinking. So you're speaking your heart. You're speaking from what comes in the center of you and you're speaking it. And that reveals your heart. And so if it's not bridled and all this ugly stuff comes out, that lets you know there's no religion on the inside. So Jesus taught that. That was in Matthew 15, by the way. So if a man comes to church, he sings some just beautiful songs. He goes home and he treats his wife poorly. Yeah, never do this. Yeah, you're no good with that. Yells at the kids. How many times I gotta tell you? Cusses at the coworkers. Cuts down his fellow believers. I can't believe so-and-so did such and such a church. Can you believe that? Then his religion it's worthless. It's not a true religion. It's phony, okay? You know, someone comes to church and they're quoting Bible verses. Very impressive. Look at all those Bible verses he quotes. He must memorize a lot of verses. Even better, look at the theologians he quotes. Oh, man. Got this quote, that quote. Posts them on Facebook. Twitters them out. Tweets them out. What's the word? I don't know. Pumping them out. Great theologians. Names his cat Calvin, even. I mean, he's a religious guy. The dog is Knox. Religious guy. But he's rude to other people. You know, the Christians that have the bumper stickers, three or four of them on there. Jesus is Lord, blah, blah, blah. And then they're as rude as all get out. It's bad testimony. You know, you put a fish on the back of your car, you better drive better, by the way. That's why I don't put one on mine. No, I'm just kidding. Holy Spirit says the man's religion is worthless. Write him off. He professes to be something, but it's not true. He presents himself as pursuing God, but you can be discerning about him, or sadly, maybe about you, that that's not true. Now, keep in mind, there's nothing wrong with being religious. There was a time in my life where I went around telling people, look, I'm not religious, I just love the Lord. Well, I didn't understand that religion actually is a good thing. Religion is directed towards God. It's the perversion of religion that's the problem. You know, you can't actually love the Lord Jesus if you're not religious, because that would mean then you're not going to church and you're not supporting the church and you're not praying and you're not listening to his word. And guess what? Those are all religious things. So obviously Jesus was religious. His disciples were religious. So you need to be religious. So the religious part is fine, just not bare and empty religion. Religion alone doesn't cut it with God. Now, you grow up in the church, and listen to this, children. You grow up in the church, you know, and you've been coming, singing. You've been doing. You might even be part of the youth ministry. Maybe you're older now. You're still coming, but you think you're a Christian because you're here, and maybe even because you're baptized. The water doesn't really do anything to you, right? None of that stuff means you're a Christian. None of that stuff means you have the religion inside of you. Jesus has to be invited all the way in. You know, sometimes people want a little bit of religion. They want, you know, Jesus is a nice idea. What a sweet thing, Jesus. To have a little bit of Jesus in your life, a little bit of blessing, a little bit of, that's nice. That's nice. But he doesn't want to come in on the side. He wants to come in, take over. That's the thing about the Lord is he's actually the Lord. You know what the Lord does? He commands you what to do. If you don't invite him in that way, you haven't invited him in because that's who he is. People say, do you have to obey Jesus as Lord to be saved? Well, that's what believing in Jesus as Lord means. If you'll confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord, believe in your heart God raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. What does it mean to confess Jesus as Lord? Well, Jesus answered it. He said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do the things I say? Can you imagine being the Lord, being called Lord, Lord? You give out a command and people just don't obey it. Why do you call me Lord, Lord? That's what the word means. It means master, master. King, king. It means when you confess Jesus as your Lord, it means now you're ready to follow him. Your life's going to change. And that has to affect the tongue, wouldn't you agree? Because it affects the heart, right? So if it affects the heart, then it has to affect the language, the mouth. You got it. And if it hasn't, then all the other religious words, all the other paraphernalia, ignore it. It's a smokescreen. All right, next test. Helping the helpless. Verse 27, look at it. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress. This introduces also another topic that James is going to expand upon later. He's going to talk about this in chapter 2, a faith that will help others, a faith that looks out for those who are weaker or poor. It's interesting, he's introducing these three themes as tests here, and when we get into chapter 2, we're going to see one theme. We get into chapter 3, we'll see another theme, and chapter 4, we'll see another theme. But this mercy and love is very important here, and he brings it up. He says true religion, and he calls it pure and undefiled religion. And by the way, those two words are basically saying the same thing. Pure is sort of the positive side. Undefiled is the negative side. You're pure and undefiled. They work together. What is pure is undefiled. What is undefiled is pure. You know, if you were looking for a nice glass of water and you said it was pure, that would mean it would be undefiled, right? If you said it's undefiled, it'd be pure. There's no dirt in it, there's no poison in it, there's no contaminations in it. That's what is pure and undefiled religion.
Your tongue can cut like a sword, or it can bring healing. It can give life or crush the spirit. Today, Pastor Tom explained how what comes out of your mouth is a condition of your heart and can expose your faith as not genuine. If you're unable to bridle your tongue, you deceive yourself. You may just simply be practicing religion with no true conviction. Instead, have self-control and be careful what you say. Choose to build up and edify others. We're so glad you joined us today on Discover Hope. We'd like to meet you. So if you're in the area, come visit us at Hope Bible Church. Our Sunday mornings include Bible classes at 9:30 a.m., followed by a worship service at 11 a.m. You can find out more at hopebible.org or give us a call at 443 443- 443-200-HOPE. That's 443-200-HOPE. We'd also like to invite you to join us in bringing the kingdom of God and the joy of salvation to our listeners by becoming a financial partner of Discover Hope. Find out more under the Giving tab at hopebible.org. Helping the helpless, specifically orphans and widows, with no exception of a benefit to yourself, is a sign of true and earnest faith. Next time on Discover Hope, Pastor Tom will explain how to have a true and undefiled faith that is demonstrated with a selfless and sacrificial love for those in need. This kind of love is pure and focused on others, not yourself. God sees this faith and will repay it at the resurrection of the righteous. There's much more to learn from the book of James, so we hope you'll tune in again next time. If you'd like to listen again to today's teaching or share it with friends and family, you'll find it online at hopebible.org. Thanks for joining us on Discover Hope.